Welcome, everybody, to the Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship Podcast. My name is Marshall Ferguson. Thanks for being here. As always, excited to be joining you right now live as we tape, not live wherever you're listening to this, but from Daytona. We're in Daytona. It's very exciting right now. Colin Fraser is joining me alongside Cam Bickle as well from CSBK.ca. We are here to cover all things Daytona 200 for you. We're going to be recording these basically at the end of each day, just talking about what we've seen, what the storylines are. You guys have made your way down here. I'm sure you have discussed thoroughly everything that is going on. I'm sorry to make you rehash any and all of the storylines that you have talked through. I just got in right now on Wednesday evening. I'll be posting this so that people can listen to it on Thursday morning because we're on track as of Thursday morning. It is off and away we go, and it's basically going to ramp up Thursday, Friday, Saturday, weather permitting. The race is coming up at 1 p.m. on Saturday afternoon, Colin.
Yeah, it looks very positive. The predictions for the weather were very negative. We had no testing with Bridgestone, unfortunately, at Jennings GP, so that didn't play out. But more importantly, we need to get through the next 3 days, and it's very, very hectic. It's 3 days, which would be normal CSBK, but it doesn't feel like that because first qualifying is the second session, and depending on what happens, and also you want to try and get into the time attack, which is not something we do. So you don't have much time, and obviously with this large group of Canadians, last year we had a grand total of no one in time attack. So we're hoping out of a field that's very deep, maybe a couple of Canadians can make it to time attack. And then we'll see at the end of the day, Friday, we'll be talking about the full grid, the entire lineup. But time attack is the most important because it will establish the front runners.
Absolutely. And then there's also things that are kind of outside of the main framework of the entire, you know, Daytona 200 experience, because there is the practice, there is the quality, there is the time attack. And of course, there's the race, but there's also the Friday night pit attack, right, where you're trying to earn a little bit of money for your teams. And it'd be really cool to see any and all of the Canadian guys get an opportunity to show their stuff on that. We'll see whether or not that happens. The one that we have been talking about, though, Cam, coming into this, and I'll get your thoughts on this in a second too, Colin, is Trevor Dion is coming in, and we were talking about it on the drive-in, which is why I preface it this way. I just said Trevor Dion has these vibes right now of excitement around him, and I know you do a great job on CSBK.ca of being able to break down the numbers, the data, the research, all the rest, but you kind of agreed with me as we were making our way in from picking me up at the airport on the idea of he jumps on the Ducati at the end of the season last year after leaving the Kawasaki team. He ends up finishing the season at Shannonville on such a high, and then he just charges into here with all of this momentum, it feels like, and all of this excitement. If anybody's following him on social media, he's riding like crazy. He's testing. He's doing all sorts of fun things, getting used to what he's going to be attacking with in this Ducati. How do you feel about the way that Trevor Dion looks coming into this round? Because you and I were kind of on the same page with this.
Yeah, I mean, some people are going to roll their eyes at the word that I'm going to use, but there's a real swagger to the way that Trevor Dion's riding right now. Really poised, really calm, really confident. And he's got a great bike. Yeah. You know, he has a great bike in Canada. He's got, you know, let's face it, an even better bike with the reigning champions. Josh Herron won last year. You know, he has the full package, and you can tell in his mind. I mean, obviously, we haven't seen him the last couple of days, but just knowing Trevor, that he has that swagger, that attitude that good competitors have, that, you know, I think in his mind he can come in and win this thing. And I don't see why, you know, the way he's riding and the way that we've heard that he rode in Savannah the other day, I don't see why not.
He's been hidden a little bit, it feels like, Colin.
So there's a few things to unpack with the Trevor Dion story. Two different Ducatis, V4 Superbike last fall at Shannonville, then onto the Twin at Daytona for the CCS, then on the Twin for 3 days last week, and then onto the factory Twin that he will race this week. So he's been riding a lot. That's really important. He's getting used to the Dunlops because Ducati are using the Dunlops for the rest of the season in the United States. So that is a choice they've made in terms of chassis. They don't want to pursue multiple programs. I'm not much for swagger, and I'm going to be fascinated. This is your first time at the Speedway. Tomorrow we'll see when you come up against some full-blown American swagger. Well, wait till you see the defending champion and you let me know about swagger.
I agree, but I would also like to preface this, and this is the part of the conversation where I say, Cam is more experienced at this than I am. I'm the complete new guy. And we mentioned this as we were making our way in, where I said, I just feel like Trevor Dion's got this cool kind of energy building around him, where he kind of comes in and like he finishes the season on such a high. And you basically said, yeah, that doesn't mean anything once the bikes start rolling on a Thursday, right? And that I completely agree with you. It's just, I like trying to get a sense for where people at. And there was a point I felt like basically at CTMP, whether it was the mechanical in one of the early races there at the end of our CSBK season last year, where I almost felt like he's just defeated. Like he's so frustrated. He didn't seem like he was happy. Didn't seem like he was all that comfortable. And then he goes into Shannonville at the end of the season and he just felt like he was more himself. Like to everybody that we talked to, he's just like, yeah, he's happy. And, you know, we see him in the paddock at the end of the evening at Shannonville and he's enjoying riding the bike and he feels like his rider position is better on the bike and he's got more comfort. And I'm really interested to see what, you know, Alveston, Ontario swagger looks like compared to the Josh Herons and the Joshua Hayes and the everybody else that is here. Because I agree with you. There is a different level of it. There is a different confidence.
How about the French World Endurance team? Those boys. How about the fastest rider at the Isle of Man?
I was going to say,
this is some swagger.
Hickman's got the 13 times at the Isle of Man TT and all the rest. I get it. It's just what I find so interesting and intriguing about this, and this is, I guess, what I want to ask you next, is you mentioned today 78 was your first, right? Being down and seeing this and experiencing this, being a rider and being around it and running and all the rest. The idea of there being so many layered storylines. Like I've covered a lot of sporting events, whether it be football or otherwise. And I love that as I'm doing prep and research and looking into this, it's like I see Kaley Yakov, who's here as a 17-year-old from Pennsylvania, who's on the Rahal Ducati Moto team, right? I see that and I'm like, wow, female, incredible storyline. Young female, even more incredible storyline. Who she's teaming up with, who the team owner is. Incredible layering to all of that. I see those Isle of Man TT storylines and the guys coming over from the UK. You see the Spanish influence, the Xavi Flores and all the rest. You see the Joshua Hayes, the veterans. You see the, and it starts to just add up to the point where you essentially, it's like, it feels really fortunate for us to have the number of interesting Canadian storylines here. Because we haven't even gotten to, you know, somebody named Ben Young or Trevor Daly working with him on Team Battleaxe or any of the guys that have made their way in the journey to this point. Because yes, we are here to focus on all things Bridgestone CSBK and the riders and the Canadians that have made their journey. But there's also just so many different angles to this thing. It almost feels like in my past where you throw an all-star race together from a bunch of different ventures and you just say, okay, 320 kilometers, go. See what happens.
Well, I think what's interesting is that when they cooked up this format 2 years ago where it doesn't count towards the championship, right, the rules are slightly different and the tires open, nobody could have understood what that was going to, how much traction that idea got and how much attention has focused on an event that years ago, you know, Giacomo Agostini won here 50 years ago for Yamaha. It was a huge moment in international racing and gradually the race dissipated and we could spend hours debating how that happened. But I'm not saying it's back to where it was 50 years ago, but it's come back really quickly. And I think part of that is, you know, at the end of the day, Friday, we'll have a grid sheet. We'll be able to see where people qualified. We'll say, this guy did what we thought. This guy's disappointing. This guy's a dark horse. Last year, Elliott Vieira never had his bike run right until the race, and he was the top Canadian. There's going to be some issues. There's going to be red flags. Pit stops are always a problem. Surviving with your tires, all that kind of stuff. But where I was headed with this is probably Friday night, we'll come up with at least 20 people we think can win this race. And that is not typical, right? Like even at a Grand Prix, yeah, there's 20 guys here who can win races. But this weekend, there aren't 20 guys who are going to win this race. Mm-hmm. And understand, 20 is not the grid like it is in MotoGP. 20 is just the front of the grid. So it's a very unusual situation. And I think this race has picked up this incredible amount of gravity in this very short period of time. And also, because the good data about how the Daytona 200 runs is old data, because the recent data is too new or not useful because it was a club race which had a lot of red flags and wasn't won at a strong pace. So you can't know. And, you know, Sebastian Tremblay is a Suzuki rider. He's riding a Kawasaki. He's won championships on Kawasaki's. He's never run the Daytona 200. But, you know, would it be a shock that somebody like Sebastian Tremblay has the wherewithal to put a package together to do well here? Am I picking him to win? No, but am I interested to see 2 days from now where he's got to and what his confidence level is? Because he's a very calm guy and that counts for a lot here. And then, you know, Josh Herron, who won last year, I wouldn't categorize his behavior as in the least bit calm, but nonetheless, he won it. And by the way, in terms of what we're doing, which is, you know, producing entertainment, somebody who's doing that for us to talk about is heaven sent, right? And we have five or six guys here who are elbows out. And, you know, if it's a drafting battle late in the race, you're going to have to be elbows out to have a shot at this one.
It's so true. the thing that I'm so interested into going into this again as the rook in our content team here is that you've got, Cam, like the high banks obviously add the dynamic element of this. There's more drafting right around this place than there is in most of the rest of the Moto America season. It's basically, what would you say, the Andretti straight times... times what?
Well, I think the problem is that the Andretti straight, which isn't straight and is right. uphill, so it's like, you know, good
for climbing.
Us. CTMP has a great story. There's a lot to digest about how that works. But here, you know, you come out of the chicane, you head up the banking, right? Then it's onto the trioval, pit lane down low, past the motocross track, onto the trioval, more trioval, steeper banking in front of the spectators. And the whole time you're picking up gear, you're running the tallest gearing your bike's ever had. You're running it longer at higher RPMs than you've ever done. The tire consumption's brutal because it's killing the tire, not just in the turns like you're used to, but on the banking, it's killing mm-hmm. the tire and your fuel consumption. And you're riding the bike often with it full of fuel, which is a very unpleasant thing, particularly if you just put a brand new front tire on and you're trying to get your confidence back. And this is why we often see after that first pit stop, they spread out a lot. Then they kind of get their act together again. And in that transitional period, in my opinion, last year, that's where Ben Young looked really good. He didn't have a great bike, but he was making solid decisions. Unfortunately, he fell late in the race. And we haven't talked about Ben, but, you know, Ben showed himself remarkably well last year. And, you know, for him, it's hard to understand, but this used to be his world. He used to race in this series. He knows these people. He knows a lot of the teams. There's some pride there. You know, he's representing us, but he's representing him. And there's a little bit of unfinished business here at the Daytona 200 for Ben Young.
So I'll ask this to you both. I'll begin with you, Colin. I'll leave it totally open-ended to you, whether it's a technical element, a mental aspect. What is the thing that you deem to be the most important in this race?
I think it's the ability to know when to engage, because your racers like to race and there's lots of racing to do and the slipstreaming's fun. So you need to get going. You need, you know, like when you come over the boards at the start of your shift or at the start of a game, you need to get into the game fast. And I think we've seen like, you know, people like Josh Hayes sometimes ride a little harder than you expect because he's such an experienced guy. But I think he knows he has to get that going. And there's several guys here who are not going to hang, who are going to go. Now, there are several guys, we have no idea what they'll do in that situation because they've never ridden, like, you know, Hutchison doesn't know this world. I mean, he's watched television. He's a smart guy. But the Isle of Man, they send you out one at a time, yep. right? So it's really complicated. And I mean, Cam and I have spent a lot of time talking about the Yamaha World Endurance Team, because don't forget, normally those guys are preserving the bike and then handing it off to each other. Right. Now they're racing each other. It's a completely different scenario. And how those guys act,
I would love to see those three get grouped up at some point and have to actually ride.
Well, wait till qualifying, because almost for sure that's what those guys will do, because you can bet they were here in the fall. They spent a lot of time plotting this out. And what could be better for this race than a non-American victory? And of course, we're all focused on the Canadians, but realistically, the most likely non-Canadian victory is not a Canadian.
I'll say this, though. They did put out on the Moto America website, Cam, the top 15 most likely to go ahead and win this damn thing.
Missing some Canadians.
Missed a couple of Canadians. But I'll ask you the same question that before we get to some more of the Ben Young discussion and maybe some other names here. What do you think is the most important thing that you believe determines the outcome of this race? Because I'm so intrigued by this, because I love, you know, whether it's the Daytona 500, if it's the Indy 500, I love the idea of you go into it and you have your four or five or six favorites. And it kind of becomes, if anybody knows the concept of like final destination, right, where it's like, oh no, Danica had trouble in the pits, and then, oh no, this person had a flat, and then, oh, this person got involved in it, oh, this person had a mechanical, or oh, that person made a bad decision, and you just one by one, you start to see him get knocked down, and all of a sudden at the end of the race, it's like, well, it's just Danny Aslick and Brandon Pasch, or it's Ben Young and it's Trevor Dion, or whatever it might end up being as a combination. I love the idea of what Colin said in engaging and not engaging, but I also don't know how the heck these guys are supposed to know when to push. Like, what do you think is the most important thing that helps determine this race?
Yeah, both what Colin said and what you just said kind of lead into what my answer was going to be, which is, you know, it's all about managing. And obviously people think, you know, you got to manage your tires, you got to manage your fuel. I think you got to manage your emotions more than anything. Yeah. It's a 57 lap race. It's not a sprint, but there's times near the start and especially near the end, if you run into red flag scenarios where it's going to be a sprint. You know, you don't want to get tangled up fighting over 26th in the middle portion of the race. and find out with six laps to go that, you know, you could have used that extra energy, that extra fuel, that is, those extra tires.
Or the lap traffic, which is the other thing that it blows me away when you watch
this.
And
it gets complicated because Cam touches on a really important thing, that if you think you can win and you were in the lead group before the first stop and you're racing for 11th, and we'll see this play out, that people make friends of strangers, maybe even people they never want to spend 5 minutes near, and suddenly those two are slipstreaming each other, keeping lap time up, not racing, not hurting the tires, and trying to work their way back. And we did see a fair bit of that. And that's, you know, that's a little bit of chess, right? You don't see that in a lap. You have to watch and pay attention and see who's marching ahead. But the problem here is all of this makes great sense, but there's probably going to be a red flag. And, you know, last year there was some carnage late in the race, and then it turned into this crazy, what we call like a lightweight slipstreaming battle. And, you know, seeing these guys on these bikes at this track riding that way is honestly pretty frightening. And I don't mean they don't know what they're doing, but it's just really close, and everybody has to pay detailed attention. You know, when you're on the banking lap after lap, it's amazing, right? How you turn your head, how it's inside the fairing, where you're looking, your arms, your wrists, your feet, how you turn your feet, your ankles, your knees, what's on top, what's behind. You know, we heard a little bit about Trevor Dion trying to get the Ducati. He's a fairly tall guy for a Ducati, so he fits. And you know, you ask a question, are you comfortable on the bike? Here it's a literal question. Physically, when you know, it's like, are you comfortable driving your car? It's that kind of a question, because it's a long, long way. And if you get really uncomfortable, it's going to hurt your ability to move around on the bike late in the race.
And I know from talking to Trevor Daly up at his garage in Hamilton as well in the last couple of months leading up to this as a member of Team Battleaxe and riding alongside Ben Young, that he's changed a little bit of his training as well in terms of physically, because it's not necessarily, like you say, the 18-lap shootout. It's not go as hard as you possibly can at all points and try and get it there. Obviously, there are points in a normal Bridgestone CSBK race where you will sit back and you'll wait it out and you'll read the other guy, or you'll pick your spot. We saw Ben Young do that at Shannonville at the end of the Saturday race where he ended up clinching the title in 2023. But it's also the concept of, when do you know that you have the stamina to actually go the distance in this thing? Because that's the other element, is not only the mechanical or, the philosophical, the emotional that Cam is speaking about. It's also the idea of, can you get your heart rate to like 160 and ride the 31 degree banking for an hour and 45 minutes? Like, and that's a real question, I think, for a lot of these guys.
Well, and I think how it plays, you know, we always tend to look in life at what happened last time and base our plans on that. And it often is a bad way, but it's how humans are. And you know, I can't help but jump two laps back, which is 2022, which is Patch on the Triumph. And he opted not to change a tire and then caught up. And there wasn't a huge group of people. There was a small group of people. But I think where I'm headed with this is he had his head down the whole way. So he wasn't pacing himself and he wasn't thinking about it much. He wasn't with other people. He had a target in the distance. And we all know that once you're close enough to really see the people you're chasing, then you can catch it up. And that Patch effort was one of those, you know, signature, well-judged, how can you win this race? But last time, it was just this crazy shootout, and Heron seemed best equipped to make those kinds of decisions and had been involved in a fairly controversial incident not that far previous in the race, and had to kind of overcome some concern about him even receiving a riding penalty because of what was going on in the battle for the lead. And we haven't even touched on all these GSXR 750s.
Well, yeah, that is the next thing I wanted to go to, is in terms of guys that you're used to seeing ride on certain bikes, like Maverick Sear, Triumph, right? Yeah, makes sense. Okay, got it. But the idea of Ben Young not being on a BMW, being on a GSXR 750 with Suzuki is like, okay, this is different, right? We'll see what he's going to do on that. You mentioned what's going on with Sebastian Tremblay, Kawasaki. Be great to see him get comfortable and back up to speed with it relatively quickly. Obviously, we know Trevor Dion is good on the Ducati. We've seen that by the end of last season. He's put a lot of work into it. The one that intrigues me the most, Sammy Grahan. Like, he was so good for essentially, I want to say four, but with Shubenacadie being washed out last year, essentially three of the rounds, whether it was at the start of Shannonville, Grand Bend, and then going on to CTMP, he was, I think, the the complete undersung hero of my first year of doing the commentary on Bridgestone CSPK racing on TSN was because he has that incredible weekend at CTMP, ends up being able to help Ben Young in such a huge way against Alex Dumas. And then he comes in here on the Kawasaki. And I'm just honestly excited to sit down with him and talk to him about what is this like for you? Because he's back on the BMW, I believe, as far as we're going into the Superbike season back in Canada. But he's jumping onto this thing and just saying, why not? Which is kind of what Sammy's whole mood is it not? It's just he jumps on bikes and he goes, sure, this will be fun.
Yeah, I mean, Sam, if you know anything about him, he can pretty much ride anything with two wheels and probably a lot of things with more than two wheels. And, you know, he's jumped
doing baggers and icing racing.
he's jumped on a lot of different machines, you know, at different times throughout his career. And he's always been fast. It doesn't matter who he's racing against or where or, you know, what machine, he's always fast. And obviously Daytona is an extreme challenge. We're not saying he's going to just hop on this machine and be, you know, setting a lap record on Friday. But, you know, the one thing we know about Sam Girand is he's a very naturally talented rider. I expect that to carry over a bit to the Kawasaki, even though he's going to be a little unfamiliar with it. And Sam, also, if you remember, calling to 2022, he rode through some pretty serious mechanical issues on BMW, which obviously you don't want to ride through any mechanical issues in Daytona, but that ability to manage a machine that's maybe not at its best is something that may come in handy over 57 laps, which is going to test not just him, but that Kawasaki.
Yeah, Sam Girand is very entertaining. He's a guy ready for a breakthrough. He hasn't had that Superbike win. He's been at the front since he turned pro. You know, Calabogie, as soon as we saw him as a pro, it was a big breakthrough. He almost won at Mosport a few weeks later. And since then, he's been near the front. You know, at Shannonville last September, I think we were disappointed he didn't do better. We were thinking maybe this was the weekend he wins one of these three races. This is going to be tough for him. And I worry, too, because I think that former flat track star Steve Beattie has been instrumental in the transition, and he's really helped the Garand program a lot. Steve Beattie is working on Suzuki's this weekend with the Ben Young Trevor effort, and you know, good for him. And they have a hugely deep setup. I mean, I was talking to them about how their pit stops are going to work. You were showing me some video you shot at Trevor's shop, and you know, having a good solid plan and not making mistakes. Like understanding you got to dump this fuel in the bike, you're going to change your front tire, you're going to put on a new rear tire. That means you're taking the chain off the bike. This bike's coming in hot. The rider's agitated. There's a lot of moving parts. And it's funny. We were talking about this at Jennings. You know, the key, for instance, the biggest issue of risk is the guy at the rear, because that's the drive chain. That's alignment. That's a thing that can turn into a disaster if everybody isn't careful. And they were saying, and it's probably going to be Ben's dad, Scott, who's going to do the rear tire. Yep. That would suggest he's the guy they trust. But everybody said the same thing. We're going to tell Scott, don't rush. And it sounds crazy. You know, no one in a Red Bull pit stop in Formula One is telling the guys don't rush when they're doing it in 2.8 seconds. But the problem is, if you make a mistake, you start losing time in tens of seconds, right? And fixing it, grabbing the tools, figuring out what you need to do, find another wheel. You know, we've seen people put the wheel with the bad tire back on. We've seen people drop brake pads out, jam spacers. Like, and it's not hard. It's just hard when you want to do it quickly, and everybody knows how to do it, but in the pit lane, it's very, very, it's the environment in the pit lane at Daytona with the bikes going by at 180 miles an hour on the banking not far away is a very loud, violent, disturbing place to be doing precision work.
And I was, you know, at Trevor's garage, like you said, showed you some of the video of watching them do pit practice. I posted some of that stuff on my social media, and what I found incredible about it, and I'm not sure if this is your experience watching people get up to speed on having to actually go through the pit process, but it went from them being, in all transparency, kind of clunky, kind of awkward, kind of nervous, kind of don't really know what we're doing. 20 reps in was better than 10 reps in. 30 reps in was better than 20 reps in, and on and on and on and on. And by the time that I was headed out of there, partly because my 3.5-year-old son was being a brat and decided that he wanted to throw a fit, and I'm like, they're in the middle of practicing for the Daytona 200. We need to get out of this garage right now. But as I'm watching this development happen, it's not the only time that they're going through this. It's not the only time they're talking about it. But it was a week and a half ago, right? And it was essentially, it was raw. Like, it was not even remotely close to a finished product. But by the development that I saw from, and this is just Team Battlex we're talking about with Ben and Trevor, but some of these teams, you know, you see the articles that have been written about who could win the race, and a lot of it is they have the support, they have trained guys, they know what they're doing. There's not going to be any nervousness when it comes down to all of the elements that come with the Daytona 200. That's one of the things that realistically a lot of these Canadian riders are battling uphill against, is that they don't have that, you know, factory help or whatever it might be. But to go back to the start of the conversation full circle, like being with the Warhorse team that Trevor Dion is on, like he's going to have legitimate support that's a little bit different than some of the other guys that are here representing the Bridgestone CSBK, is he not?
Well, if you want to cook it down, it's the you've touched a nerve here, right? Because you're talking about the team that won last year, mm-hmm. a team that's been very, very successful. For trivia buffs, this is the team that brought Claudio Cordi to Daytona, to Mosport to run the Aprilia and really kind of changed CSBK in one weekend with how competitive and how he approached things and what he forced to happen and how he changed the pace. The same bunch of guys, to some degree, you know, they're a pro team and they have serious help from Italy. You know, those bikes are being tuned and technical information is coming from Ducati. So it's hard not to think that Dion is so far ahead of anybody but Ben Young and Trevor, partly because you know, Trevor's background is very interesting. He can make things. He's a machinist. He's a very creative metal guy, which is important. But also, he used to work in car endurance racing, and they are multiple levels advanced beyond us because the whole IMSA series is endurance racing. This is it for us. You know, we don't do any more endurance racing. I mean, it's not exactly endurance racing, but it's got pit stops where you're adding fuel. There's a pit lane speed limit. It's endurance racing.
Elements of it, yes.
Right. And you know, the M4 wheels, the more or less work Suzuki team, their background is they used to be the top endurance team in the United States. You know, there's definitely a lot of pride in pit stops and whatnot there. But, you know, if your bike's late or your rider's new, right away, your alternatives involve being careful and going slowly. Yes. And you can't argue that. And, you know, I'm sure over the course of the next couple of days, we're going to be telling some people who are telling us their sad tale of woe, don't rush, right? Be careful. Don't make a mistake. Make sure your tires are okay when you leave the pit lane, that you're ready to start riding hard again. Because this is unusual, right? Dump a whole bunch of gasoline, a full tank in, change both the tires. And, you know, I asked Trevor Daly, he goes, we're not going to check the tires ever. We're changing them every time. And that's what serious teams do, right? They don't do what worked 2 years ago and gamble on pushing through on the tire. You just keep putting tires on the bike so it's always as fresh as it can be.
I hadn't actually thought about the technical aspect of this, and I don't know how actually technical it is, but it's the idea of coming in light, leaving heavy, and not having any chance to get your bearings until you actually have to turn to exit the pits. And then this incredibly long pit exit. Which, like, I don't know if there would be a different way to do it, if there's any smart way to do it, but I'm like, it takes them forever to get out of this thing, and I can only imagine what it feels like to want to be pushing the pace, your pit speed limiter is off, you're racing out of the pit, and you got to go see guys go zooming past you on turn two, turn three, winding around turn four, you're trying to make as fast a turn as you can to get out of turn four. That's what Josh Herron did so well, right, was be able to pound his way out of there and get up to speed and then right back onto the track and going as hard as he possibly could. But the mental aspect that Cam spoke of going into the pit experience is not just the pits. It's the leaving the pits. It's how do you approach that? And that's something I'm actually really interested to see on Thursday in the practice sessions, is if guys do come in and whether they're stopping in or doing simulated pit stops or actual pit practice or whatever it might be, and then trying to figure out, what is my approach to get out of here? What am I comfortable with?
Well, I mean, you can ask Brandon Bash last year, you know, can races be won or lost in the pit lane? They absolutely can. He very well could have won a third consecutive Daytona 200 if it wasn't for a pit lane speed penalty, which, you know, obviously I didn't get a great look at that stop if he was scrambling to make up time or, you know, what went on there. But there's a lot of variables that go on in that pit lane, and they all happen very, very fast, as Colin said earlier and as we've talked about. There's a lot. We've talked a lot about the team element of pit stops and the changes. There's a lot of pressure on the rider between the years, you know, as we talked about with the speed limiter. There's obviously, I'm not a rider. Colin can speak to this, you know, a lot more than I can, but so much of it, I'm sure, you know, we focus on the team element from the pit lane. There's probably a million things going through rider's head when they come through, and that can determine your race. You know, you could be having a flawless race and throw it all away in 5 seconds.
Do you have the Group A, Group B stuff lined up there? I know I saw you scrolling a little bit of that, Cam, but you mentioned it when it kind of came earlier tonight. There were some other tire manufacturers as well who announced their team. Like we said, we obviously know that Dunlop is going to be able to have Trevor Dion on the line. But the difference between Group A, Group B, Colin, before Cam gives some shout-outs here to kind of preview what we're going into here on a Thursday morning, what is, in your experience, the difference between Group A, Group B?
Well, the series makes its decision. It's not a points race. There's only one session that leads towards this, and it doesn't matter because we already know who Group A and Group B are. And the problem is that when you start looking for ultimate lap time here, and it's not crucial to qualify at the front, but it's always better to qualify at the front, and it eliminates variables. You're going to probably want to go out and ride with other people. And of course, you know, in the old days, it was all the Yamahas rode together or all the Hondas. I'm sure we'll see, you know, for instance, the French World Endurance guys, as I expect, they're going to be very much geared towards riding together. But also, the A group is considered to be the fast group. And if you're not in the A group, there's going to be the concern that you're not riding with fast people, so you're judging yourself against a slower group. And this is, you know, it's funny, we just, you know, last fall did the mini GP, and the hardest part about it is, you know, how fast were our kids going just racing each other, and then we go and meet every kid from the world who rides one of those bikes, and you discover we were going well, but there is another step, and picking up that step quickly when you're on the track with them is an unbelievable moral challenge, because it's so hard on your head that you are not, you know, you're used to being one of the fastest guys, and now people are going by you and you can't stay with them. And the Group B guys don't have the good target. The Group A guys, you know, Sebastian Tremblay, I don't think is in Group A, but he told me on Tuesday, you know, that it would be so important to be there because he expects to try and ride with those guys. He needs that as his motivator and his benchmark.
All right. What do we got, Cam? What are some of the names that interest you in terms of that they're in A or that they're in B?
Well, in terms of Canadians in Group A, we have Ben Young and Trevor Daly, the two teammates on the Suzukis, and Trevor Dion.
Yep.
So no crazy surprises with those three. Especially
it also means that somebody figured out that there are some fast Canadians.
Well, I was also going to say, though, like for all the things that we've talked about where it's like Trevor Dion is not really being talked about a whole lot, and you know, there's not a whole lot of hype about it coming in. All the rest, it's like, well, somebody knows he's fast because he's in Group A. So, we might not be talking about it a whole lot, but somebody has realized he's fast.
Well, and I assume being on, you know, an HSBK Ducati has had a large part of putting him in Group A. But also, you know, from what we've heard from the test in Savannah the other day, you know, there was no illusion that he couldn't ride at the highest level.
Is the branding or is the affiliation enough to push him into Group A?
No, I have a hunch that there was a lot of scrambling, and you know, the largest group of people in one place in the preseason were at Savannah with Dunlop. And he, as far as we know, it's a Dunlop test. We were at a Bridgestone test, so we weren't there. Right. He was in the fourth or fifth place range and running with the people who would be expected to be the pace setters. Now, even this is a bizarre thing because Dunlop, like everybody else, goes to conservative tires at Daytona because of the demands of the banking, right? So you're testing at a conventional road course in preparation for the most bizarre tire-demanding race of the year.
Yeah.
So even if Trevor looked great in terms of lap times, it doesn't mean as much as you'd like it to think. But for me, what's important is if Trevor was riding with Josh Hayes or Heron or, you know, whoever he spent time with on the track, then he knows now. I'm okay with these guys. Yeah. Now, I don't think he's ever had a problem along those lines, but it's really nice the first time you ride with somebody who is a benchmark guy and you're capable of producing at that level.
And the psychology of doing that on a Thursday would be really interesting to the rest of Trevor's weekend, right? Because he jumps up into that group, and if he does gain that confidence, then he'll go into, whether it's Thursday afternoon into Friday morning, how he's going to feel all of Thursday evening, depending on how things go the rest of the day, and he stays clean and all the rest, he could actually go into Friday morning going, why not? Right? If I can do that, if I learn that on Thursday, why not?
Also, when you think of the riders on Ducatis here, and we don't know where the Rahal guys are going to go, or if they're friends with Warhorse, we don't know yet, right? These bikes have never raced. This team didn't exist. But I'm pretty comfortable that at least Dion will be able to ride with the other Warhorse Ducati, that they're the logical people to leave the pits together looking for lap time. If he can pace his teammate, he's going to be on the front row.
Pretty good.
And one thing we saw last year going into the Friday is from the Thursday practice sessions into Friday qualifying – well, I guess into Thursday qualifying and then the time attack, is the top riders, especially the guys from Group A, shaved about a second off of their times. And obviously some of that can be, you know, track conditions or bike setup, but you know, those top guys have an extra gear when they need it. Yeah. And Trevor Dion certainly has shown that. Ben Young certainly has shown that. Trevor Daly certainly has shown that. So I think as those guys get more track time, that pace is going to continue to drop, maybe more so than it will in Group B. That's no offense to any of those riders. But, you know, we saw the pace at the front. It starts off fast and it only gets faster.
Yeah, absolutely. It's time for the segment that's sweeping the nation here, Colin.
This is the peak of the Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship as we head into the final lap. The white flag comes out.
One lap to go.
The white flag flies.
It's our last lap flag.
It's the white flag, the final lap.
Last lap flag, one to go.
There it is. One more thing that's on Colin Fraser's mind here. The white flag on the Bridgestone CSPK podcast.
Excited to see if there's a machine that's going to come out of left field and produce some lap times. And we've talked about the Ducatis. I'm very excited about the Suzukis. I think they're overdue for a win. But there's two British Triumphs that are here with direct support from the factory with two very, very strong riders. And one of them a very large man, one of them a diminutive man who's had a lot of success and has been to Daytona before. So I'm not calling them dark horses, but we didn't talk about Triumph. And we have no idea how those bikes are going to run. But they're factory Triumphs, and they made a big deal. The UK press are really going hard on this. So tomorrow I'm going to be really looking to see, particularly in the speed traps, what those Triumphs are capable of.
Mm, interesting. I don't have any fancy imaging for you, Cam, but I thought I'd give you a chance to have one more
thought. Can get there one day. The guy that I'm really fascinated to see is the Richie Escalante Revenge Tour. Colin laughs, but you know, Josh Herron was extremely fast all weekend last year. He was a deserving winner. The only guy that really seemed to go toe-to-toe with him the whole weekend, and of course he led majority of the race, was Escalante, and then they, of course, had the controversial incident. I think Escalante can easily win this thing. He's got the bike to win this thing. I want to know what the emotional state is or mental state is of him when he gets on track tomorrow, and can he create a bit more of a rivalry here between him and Herron?
The one thing that's on my... Who's riding the OnlyFans livery? I've seen the pictures of it floating around social media. Is that Josh Herron?
Reigning winner, yeah.
Is that Josh Herron? Oh, that's. We'll see who ends up on that. Okay, coming up at the Daytona 200. The actual thing that's on my mind, my first time being down here, is I want to be able to see for the first time, basically through the tribal. Like I've talked to Ross Melson, the series owner and national events manager, about this, where he just says, "Yeah, you stand in the hut pit for the first time, and you look up, and they go zooming around the corner, and you just go, whoa." It's a little bit different, so I'm super excited to be able to see that. But guys, we're looking forward to having a great weekend here and covering some great Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship riders. Thanks for hanging out. We'll have some fun coming up for the rest of the week, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.